Hello, I'm Taboo.
And I'm Church.
And we are the Dark Souls 2.
And welcome to the Dark Souls 2, where this episode we're talking about Earthen Peak post-Covetous Demon, so everything after you fight that big fatty.
That big fatty.
Yeah. The Gina Reinhardt demon.
Nice little political comment.
Yeah.
Not really. Just personal comment.
It's just a personal attack. Well, she deserves it. Anyway.
She does.
So, before we get into that, though, what's new, Taboo?
Well, last episode we talked a little bit about Project Beast, and what we discussed was the video that had just come out of a bit of gameplay, but had we recorded literally less than 6 hours later, we would have been able to talk about it much more in depth.
Because it was officially announced at E3.
Yeah. What we have learnt from that is that pretty much most of our suspicions are true. It's going to be a PS4 exclusive, and it's coming out in 2015.
Did we predict that, 2015?
No, I don't think so.
Let's just say we did. No one's going to go back and check.
Of course.
You're too lazy.
But the part that does make me a little bit excited is that we've learnt that it's being led by Miyazaki. Miyazaki was the director of Demon's Souls and Dark Souls 1, and to me, his absence was noticeable in Dark Souls 2.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm glad to have him back. I think it's good. It explains why he wasn't on the Dark Souls 2 project.
For me, Miyazaki was the main driving force behind like the feel and the darkness that came with Demon's Souls and Dark Souls. He was also the sort of driving force behind the game mechanics as well. So he's pretty much what made the Souls series.
Absolutely, yeah. And we've talked a lot about how this game is different to the other games, particularly, I think, a difference between Dark Souls 1 and Dark Souls 2 and some kind of
attention to detail type stuff, I think.
Yeah, but also there are some overarching things, like the fact that the map isn't one cohesive thing and it's actually disjointed, or really weird decisions like the Pharos Lockstones. And I just think that if Miyazaki was there cracking skulls, then it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, who knows? But nonetheless, I mean, what we've learned about this new game, or at least what we've seen of Bloodborne, is it does seem to definitely follow the same Souls kind of feel. We've seen a little bit of combat. It seems a bit faster paced, and so far I haven't seen any shield, so it seems a bit more dodgy, more than shieldy kind of play.
Mm. And I think that if you watch the trailers and stuff, there's a real darkness, like a real kind of grittiness to it all. It reminds me of industrializing England in the late 1700s, early 1800s, maybe.
I'd get a very Van Helsing / Jack the Ripper era London sort of feel.
Yeah, you know, those times were dirty and gritty and such.
Yeah, Black Plague kind of, all of that sort of feel.
The Black Death.
Yeah. It certainly seems to have upped the gore and horror aspect of Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Which is good, because it's a Souls game, or at least it appears to be, but different enough from the other ones where it's going to be a completely unique experience. So hopefully, what I hope to see out of it is a game that keeps to the core fundamentals of what made the Souls games great, like the combat and maybe even hopefully co-op and player interaction side of things, but with a setting and a story that's completely separate from everything we've seen up to this point, so it doesn't just feel like a rehash of what we've already seen, which Dark Souls 2 kind of did feel like. Most of the weapons were the same as in Dark Souls 1, and a lot of the lore is identical.
I mean, yeah, I don't know that it's similar enough to criticize on that front, but I take your point completely. There's two things about that. Firstly, I'm interested to know whether souls are the currency, or the whole of the Souls series obviously turns around souls, but there's no word souls in the name Bloodborne, and it's already different.
It's completely standalone.
Well, see, that's what I was wondering, because there's still some common elements.
Right.
It's got the Soulsy feel. There's still, like, fog doors of a type that we've seen.
And you do sort of seem to see little glowing soul-type-looking things on corpses where you can pick up an item.
So what I'm thinking, like, I was thinking about this morning, right? I had nothing better to do. And it seems like you could make an argument that actually Demon Souls and Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2 are all in the same universe at different times. Like, I don't think there's anything at all that suggests that Demon Souls can't be in the Souls universe. So why can't we say that Bloodborne is potentially going to be in the same universe?
I don't think you can't, but we don't know. We don't know if that's their
intent. We're probably never going to know.
Oh, maybe. It's still at least a year out, so who knows? They might say that it is supposed to be Dranglake 2,000 years later, or who knows?
Mm.
But look, at the moment, we don't know too much about that side of things. We've just seen a bit of the gameplay and the title and a bit of the more logistical details about who's making it when it comes out. So, yeah, keep your eye open. We'll report as the news comes out.
I've got two eyes to keep open.
Thanks, Church.
Just to keep your eye open. People might think I'm like blind in one. It's true. You got to be careful.
So friggin' literal.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that. Anyway, let's move along. Speaking of Bloodborne, we asked our listeners what changes, additions, or improvement they would hope to see in Bloodborne as compared to the previous games. Week. Yeah. So we got some feedback, which I think was pretty good. A lot of people were saying the map.
Yeah, that seemed to be the general go-to, and I feel exactly the same. So what most of them were saying regarding that is that they loved the way that Dark Souls 1 flowed and everything sort of fit in perfectly, and it didn't sort of have the separate area feel that Demon Souls had or the kind of spooky feel that Dark Souls 2 has. And I agree. The way the map worked in Dark Souls 1 was phenomenal.
Although Demon Souls had the same spooky feel.
Yeah, but even worse, because it didn't have any sort of joining features other than the archstones.
Yes.
Yeah. So they were used to warped areas, so there was no actual interconnection other than hit a loading screen and load into a new area through teleportation somehow.
Yeah. So Russell said that he wants to see ragdoll physics rather than fading bodies, and I really agree. I think that, you know, there are times when you kill something and its body remains in Dark Souls 2, but even then the ragdoll physics are really bizarre. Like, you kill the enemy and it just flails about all of a sudden. It goes flying up into the air. Its sword goes flying across the map.
Yeah.
Then afterwards, you can't interact with it. Like, I think I remember in Demon Souls, a room full of corpses that I've just killed. And when I march through them, my legs push them all aside.
Definitely in Dark Souls 1. I used to love, while waiting for a summon or a battle, to, like, just kill the enemies in the area and, like, pile them together and roll through them and sort of, like, fling them into the air.
Ah, yes. And your feet would catch them and they'd go flying. And yeah, awesome. Yeah.
So much fun. Just a great way to waste time. Whereas in this game, yeah, there seems no rhyme or reason to the bodies that stay and the ones that go as well. There may be a lore thing there, but I haven't been able to figure it out.
Oh, I doubt it. It's almost certainly about processing power or something.
Yes.
Jayton, cool name, by the way, Jayton, wanted the ability to do a playthrough with someone rather than random summonings. And I'm not sure that I totally agree with you, Captain Cool Name. but, you know, because I really like the unique, both as far as gameplay goes and as far as the storyline goes, I really like the unique way PvP happens in this game.
Yeah, so it seems like what he's actually asking for is a co-op mode where, say, Church and I could join the game together and play through the game together. Whereas at the moment, it's kind of random. If I see his summon sign and he's in the area, then I can summon him in, but there's just a good chance that I'm going to summon somebody else just as likely, which, to me, is what the game is about. So it's a nice idea, and I wouldn't be disappointed if I could play the game with mates, but I like that bringing the community together, people that you've never met, having to come together through this joint suffering in the world.
Yes. What do you want?
The big one for me, I sort of had to think about this question as well, because the one that I miss the most other than the map is probably the secrets. I loved in Dark Souls 1 the fact that you could cut off the tail of almost any dragon in the game and get a special weapon. That was just, it was a reoccurring theme, but at the same time, it was kind of a secret. Even dragons you didn't expect to be able to do it to, like, say, Priscilla or the Drake on the bridge in
Upper Undeadburg. Yeah.
You know, just that kind of stuff. Really cool. But on top of that, also, like, Painted World of Ariamis. I mean, Christ almighty.
It's a massive secret. Like, you could finish the whole game and never know it was there.
Yeah.
If you don't read all the things online.
And it's an exceptionally good area. You know, it had a very unique feel to the rest of the game. It almost had a more Demon Souls feel than the rest of the game. And the reason for that was because it was the first area they created when developing the new game. Yeah. So they actually made that first. That was their prototype area that they made to basically see if this game was going to become something.
Mm.
And so they put in the time and effort to make it really intricate and the way it all looped back around, but getting a bit off track here. But nonetheless, like, the fact that it's completely hidden and it's this supremely cool area.
Actually, I just thought of something. I read a while ago that we were talking about how Bloodborne doesn't have the word souls in it, but all the other games do.
Mm.
And they're all linked together by the commonality of killing an enemy to get its accumulated souls and some other common tropes. And so maybe Bloodborne's going to be different because they don't have the word souls in it. But then I remembered just now that I read a long while ago that they were initially going to call Dark Souls 1 Dark Ring.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but then they discovered, and this is, I read this on the internet, that ring is a common
euphemism
for anus, particularly in Britain, and so they decided not to do that.
Excellent.
So maybe it doesn't matter that it doesn't say souls in it.
I fell into a burning ring of fire.
Oh, my God. That's, yeah, tell it to the judge. Fell indeed. What's wrong with you?
Okay. So, we've been playing around with a bit of Twitch streaming as well lately.
Yeah.
How's that been going for us? Church?
Why are you asking me this? You're the one going off doing your own Twitches and, you know, monitoring all the...
Do the Chernobyl child.
It's called a seizure, I think, to go off and do your own Twitches. Yeah, no, I don't know. I liked it.
That's people, what you have to add.
I did. People seem to be responding positively. Thank you.
Yeah, look, the long and short is we've discussed that we're probably going to do this, and we have now. We did our first stream last weekend, and it was exceptional. We had a pretty good turnout in the chat, and we engaged with the listeners, and they engaged with us, and it was really fun.
Yeah, they all liked you, didn't they?
Oh, fuck you. It seems to be a bit of a trope for our podcast here. I'm just going to try something here. Taboo. Taboo. I'm just putting my name out there because it seems that I get forgotten fairly often in favor of the name Church for some reason.
Are you having a whinge?
A little bit.
Listen, I can't believe you would do that, to be honest. Think about how this is for me, right? All this expectation, all this admiration, you know, all these people constantly watching, right? How do you think that makes me feel? I have an expectation I have to live up to. I think you're actually being very selfish. I think you need to be a bit more supportive right now, actually.
So spending 20 hours a week cutting and writing your notes for you isn't being supportive. I've given you your personality. I've made you the man you are today.
Yeah, if you say so. Yeah, no, but really.
Are you going to tell the backstory as to why this came up?
Taboo's a pretty good guy. You all shouldn't be so mean to him. That's my job. I'm mean to him enough for everyone. You're going to talk about that video?
Our fans are simple people. Monkey see, monkey do. They're just following your lead, bro.
Oh, I take it back. You guys just do whatever you like to this guy. I can't believe he's so rude to you. I like you. You and I are friends. But this guy, far out. Anyway, what's this backstory you're talking about?
Well, why did you bring it up?
Because on the stream, everyone was being mean to you.
That's hardly true. Colpster just seemed to fall in love with you.
Yeah, well, he's only human. Anyway, shall we move on?
I think so. Okay, well.
Earthen Peak.
Yeah.
Well, the Earthen Peak after the Covetous Demon.
Yeah, so last episode we defeated the Covetous boss, and we made it to a bonfire just shortly outside of his room. And we also got to meet up with Luke Teal for the third time. So if you don't know what we're talking about, go back and listen to the end of the last episode.
Yeah.
So, tell me what you know about Earthen Peak.
So Earthen Peak is the home of Mitha, the Baneful Queen. Now, Mitha set up a whole bunch of pumps powered by windmills that we've seen from a distance as we're going through Harvest Valley.
Mm.
And those pumps were there to take the poison out of the mines up to her little Earthen Peak for use in some strange ritual which uses the poison to make her young and beautiful.
Yeah, so we'll go into that in a lot more depth as we go through, but from the outside, we've been seeing these windmills, and now going inside Earthen Peak, we are seeing a very clockworky, geared inside where obviously it's being run by the power of the windmills outside, churning these gears and making the poison get pumped up to that upper level where Mitha is.
Yeah. So you got an archway, and as you progress up a ramp, you'll eventually take on your first, not your first mannequin actually, because we've encountered mannequins last time, didn't we?
Yeah, first mannequin for this episode.
Yeah.
And the mannequins, we said that we'd discuss their backstory a little bit more in depth this episode, and that's because they rely on Mitha. So Mitha actually created these mannequins in a sort of summoning a life force to fight for you kind of a deal.
Yeah, it's pretty common, isn't it?
It's interesting that she has that ability, and again, we'll go into this a bit more later on in the episode, but if you remember, the Prince and Princess of Ven and Alkin were the ones that invented that magic.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe they sold it to her, maybe it was developed independently, maybe it's a common kind of thing.
Sure.
But Vendrick was doing it, the Old Iron King was doing it, Alkin and Ven were doing it, Mitha's doing it, all the cool kids are doing it, you know? So the other interesting thing about the mannequins is you notice they've got no head.
Yeah, and they apparently used to have heads, but Mitha ripped them off in a fit of rage. She's known as the Baneful Queen, Mitha, and Baneful because she's quite angry. She apparently pulled off their faces for simply gazing upon her.
It's a pretty long fit of rage because it's a few mannequins, isn't it? It's like, all right, come here. I'm angry. And just start ripping off their faces one after the other.
Form an orderly line.
Maybe she was just embarrassed about her, you know, snake mermaidism.
Yeah, maybe.
She leaves all the other enemies with their faces on, though, doesn't she?
So once you take out the mannequin, there's actually a lever on the wall right next to him at the top of the
And do you know, I never knew this. Like, even till today, when I came here and read your notes, I didn't know that was a thing.
The lever?
Yeah.
Okay, so do you at least know what the lever's for now?
Well, I know now.
Yeah, so you pull the lever and it raises an enormous pot that's hanging from chains over the other end of the room. And this pot is filled with poison. If you don't raise it, then you run a very strong chance of damaging it while fighting the other mannequin in this room.
Yeah.
But if you do raise it, there's actually a undead steelworker behind it, which you release, and he kind of comes after you at that point.
I mean, I always go and fight him anyway. I just go around the pot, and often he breaks the pot and poisons me.
Exactly, which is why it's worth raising the pot at this point. If you're really quick, you can raise the pot, which releases the undead steelworker, and if you break the pot while the steelworker's directly underneath it, you can poison him.
Oh, but that's pretty neat.
Not easy to do.
Yeah. If you're facing that pot, out to your left, there's a long, thin bridge. And at the other end of the bridge, you can see a grave warden.
The best way to take this guy on is to pull him from a distance. So if you've got any sort of a ranged spell, try and provoke him to come to you in this room where you can take him on safely.
Mm.
If you do take him on the bridge, there's an adjacent bridge with mannequins with poisoned arrows that will try and put you off while you're taking him on. You can sort of get him three quarts up the bridge and hide behind a large gear, which will stop most of the arrows, but it's just a risk not worth taking.
Yep, absolutely. Those guys on the right just drive me nuts. He's actually a bit tough to pull sometimes. He gets to the end of the bridge and then decides, oh no, that's all right. I didn't mind that you shot me with a spell. I'm going to go back to the other side. I was busy. Yeah, bastard. So the Grave Wardens supposedly, or purportedly, are there to look after the undead crypt, to keep out any invaders and to, I suppose, placate the dead that live there. That's nowhere near here.
Yeah, it's an area that we're going to cover much, much later on. It's going to be one of the final episodes almost.
Yeah, and I've got my own theory about why they're hanging out here, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay, fair enough. So yeah, no, nobody does seem to know why they're here. I've even done some digging around online and nobody really has any good theory beyond From had designed them and wanted to use them somewhere else and they got lazy and that's just where they ended up. Which kind of sucks.
Yeah, I think it makes sense.
Okay. Now, with these guys, you mentioned that they're glowing polearm. It's actually dark magic enchanted. So be sure to have a shield that blocks dark magic if you're going to be taking on a lot of these guys, because they do hit hard, and most shields don't defend against dark too well. But the freaking annoying thing with them is they got a ton of health, and if you leave them be for more than 5 seconds, they'll bloody Estus up.
Yeah. I mean, I like when they Estus because everyone's so... This is one of the problems with the AI. Every AI that can Estus just does it in the stupidest way possible. They don't back up and get range and Estus. They don't cast a spell then Estus. You're just fighting with them and they just stop and they go, oh, he's drinking an Estus flask. I'll just hit him with my mace.
They've probably been watching some of my tactics while I PvP.
Oh, is that what you do?
In the habit of freaking out, running away and trying to use my Estus when the guy's like less than a meter behind me.
Yeah, but I've done that before. Oftentimes the guy's really close because of lag and I don't realise.
So, take this guy out and exit on the other end of the bridge and you'll come into sort of a, what I'm calling like a balcony room. It's like a little pathway that overlooks the big area below, which is actually the Harvest Valley.
Yes.
Now, on the left is a ladder and if you get anywhere near it, two more mannequins will sort of do this backflip flourish down the ladder. It's really cool.
They're pretty agile, those guys, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
If you get close enough to the first one and you do a bunch of chained attacks with your weapon, generally you'll collect the second one along the way. And I had actually a little trouble with those initially, but once I started bailing them up in a corner, it was fine. Anyway, we don't want to go that way. We want to go the other way.
Yeah, so turn right from the end of the bridge, and there'll be another archway a couple of meters up, which gets you to that adjacent bridge where the mannequins were. However, if you do venture out there at this point, there's a big break in the bridge and you can see that there's an item on the other side, but no matter how hard you try at this point, there's no way you're going to be able to jump that break. Yes. So we will come back to it later.
Did you die there trying?
Once.
Yeah, I think I died there trying. Maybe multiple times. So bugger off from there, go back into the balcony room and go right again. So out the door and right and down some ramps onto another ledge and there's a chest with a pike.
Yeah, this ledge is adjacent to those two bridges you saw earlier. So
you can see the whole room.
Yep.
And pike's a pole arm too. It's like a long spear.
Yeah, actually a really long spear. It's got an interesting moveset. A lot of good ways to cover ground quickly and get in a small jab here and there.
Oh, really? I've never actually used it. I should get the pike out. I mean, I don't like pole arms really, but you know.
I do know that you don't mind a bit of the old little jabs here and there. So, as with all spears, this has the ability to attack while shielding.
Hmm, which is cool.
yeah, handy. But obviously, you know, you've got to monitor your stamina bar a lot more if you're going to be relying on that, because as you jab, your stamina goes down, and while shielding, it doesn't go up very quick.
Yeah. So back off the ledge, into the balcony room, to the other end, and up that ladder we talked about that the mannequins will jump down.
Yeah, and once you go up the ladder, you'll end up in another balcony room, just one level above. So this room, you see a mannequin at the other end.
Yeah, he's just hanging out.
And if you take him out, he's actually guarding one of the most important parts of this entire area. It's incredibly significant, and I well and truly missed it my first time around.
Yeah, see, I mean, I aided someone else. I dropped my sign and I aided someone, and they did it. So I knew that I had to do it first time.
Very good.
But if not for that, then how would you know? I mean, you know, you can see the message on the ramp, so you know there's a ramp there. But otherwise, how would you know there's even a way up there?
Yeah. So what it is this very small area that you can just walk up, and you'll get to the base of a windmill, a large windmill. And it seems as though...
well, you'll get to the shaft anyway.
What did I say?
The base. Base, shaft, you know, whatever. No. Shaft sounds much more obscene though, doesn't it?
Yes.
So you go up to the greasy shaft.
Which, yeah, as with most mechanical things, it does seem to be covered in grease. Because if you approach it with a lit torch out, you'll get a prompt to set it alight. If you don't have a torch, you won't get any prompt. So even if you did find this, you may not even be aware of its significance. But yes, suffice to say, if you come at it with a torch, you'll get the prompt to set it alight, and the flame travels up the shaft.
Yep, just plays its way up the greasy shaft. Yep.
And gets to the tip.
Yep.
And then sets the blades on fire.
Ouch. And obviously setting the windmill blades on fire stops the wind from being able to turn the blades, which stops the gears, which stops the pumps, which stops the poison from flooding the area, and ultimately will make the fight with the Baneful Queen much easier.
Yeah, so it has incredible significance for this entire area. It basically arrests the entire operation. So if you don't do this here and now, you're going to have a lot of trouble later on.
I've got to say, the last time I played with a greasy shaft in public, there was an arrest also.
Oh, good God. Why you do this to me, Church? Okay. So, yeah. Make sure you hit it. Because if you don't, if you don't hit the shaft.
Set the thing on fire, or else you're going to have a hard time later. What's odd? Oh, God. A hard time, a shaft, whatever. Sexual innuendo. All right. Anyway.
So, back down the ramp and up some stairs, and immediately you'll see a fog door. It's literally like a 2-meter by 2-meter balcony with a bonfire on it. Mm. That's it.
And obviously, if you need to light a torch to set the gears on fire, then that's really, it's 20 meters away. You if that, go to the bonfire, light your torch, go to the shaft, to do it. And do it. So you go up a staircase that's very close to that fog door, and you're on what we're calling level 2.5, which is kind of like the second and a half level. There's a corpse with black firebombs. And I think this is the first time you encounter black firebombs, isn't it?
This playthrough.
So that's just like a normal firebomb, but does more damage. And interestingly, Mitha, the Baneful Queen, is very weak to fire.
Mm, so it's as though it's kind of, you know, as with all things in this game, giving you a little advantage at this point if you're being observant or willing to experiment. But yeah, the firebombs, nothing really lore significant. They are literally just a more powerful version of a typical firebomb.
Which is cool. So a little further up, there's a pressure plate. And then there's a poison arrow trap.
Yeah, so if you don't fall into that trap and you sort of look a bit past it, you'll be able to see a corpse with the mannequin mask on it. But if you make a beeline for it, then you'll immediately get attacked in the back by a mannequin that's hiding in ambush.
Oh, so that makes sense that the mannequin mask would be just sitting around because the mannequins don't have faces anymore.
Yeah, obviously this is what the queen ripped off in a fit of rage.
So head back towards the top of the ramp, ignoring a large ladder on your right. That ladder can be used as a shortcut, but best handled later on.
Yeah, if you did take it now, you're actually going to skip a large portion of the area.
It's a strange one.
If you actually want to get the items in the area, just ignore it for the moment.
Mm. So go out the door that's at the top of the ramp to your right, and you'll end up on a balcony, another one of those balcony walks.
And you'll notice some wooden barriers. And it's not obvious that you can break these barriers, but they actually put these wooden boxes throughout that entire corridor, which, you're probably going to try and swing at, and quite often you'll hit a barrier and sort of realize, hold up, these are breakable. And it's kind of a hint because it's just a slight ledge that you can walk along. And at the far end is a corpse with a simpleton spice, so don't miss that. But if you turn back, you can go along the ledge and end up in a sort of semi-secret area where you meet a new NPC.
Yeah, Ladysmith Gilligan, that Scottish dude. You know, shush, you idiot, that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And they spell idiot, E-E-J-I-T.
I love idiot. It. It's great, idiot.
Shush, you idiot. Stay quiet. I'm on the run. Don't give me away. Have you heard? You know why they're extracting that poison, do you? Well, apparently, there's this monster lady, right? And the poison, well, does wonders for her body. You know, the health and beauty and that sort of stuff. And I thought only human women were so petty.
And who's he hiding from? Here's the thing. He's like, I'm on the run. Don't give me away. But you're hiding from what, the mannequins?
Yeah, it's never been made clear who he's actually running from. It's a weird one. Again,
I've and he tells you to shush, but he talks so freaking loudly.
Yeah, that's a good point, isn't it? So he's a laddersmith, which kind of feels like a bit of a niche market.
Yeah, like I'm a laddersmith. Well, there's not a lot of innovation in the ladder industry, is there? Rope ladder, step ladder, extendable ladder.
Done.
Put it in the wall with some bolts. You'll be right. Like, that's his trade.
He doesn't
trade.
Even do that.
No, that's his whole trade. He makes three length of normal ladder and then a little tiny miniature ladder, and that's it. That's his whole industry. I'm a laddersmith. Bullshit.
So, as you talk to him, he does actually offer to lend you a ladder for a fee, of course. He's a bit souls hungry, this Gilligan.
Yeah, lend indeed. Give me money, and then you have to give it back, apparently. It's ridiculous.
So if you do pay him 2,000 souls either way, he will put down a ladder to a little, even more hidden guest ledge below where you are.
Well, speaking of hidden, where the hell was he keeping that ladder? You know? He's got ladders galore. Maybe maybe it's magic. Maybe a laddersmith is a magical
conjurer.
Yeah. Imagine that. Like, you know, if there was a meeting of all the different NPCs and Carillion of the Fold says, oh, I'm a master mage and, you know, I make all magics and I can do all this stuff. And, then you meet, say, Lenegrass, and he says, oh, well, I can magically repair weapons using my anvil and hammer, and I can do all this cool stuff. And Macduff's talking about how he can take a normal stick and turn it into a stick that does fire damage. And then Gilligan's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I can pull a ladder out of nowhere. It's like, so? I don't care. How useful is that?
There's a freaking ring that makes your entire trade redundant.
Oh, the falling ring?
Yeah.
Well, that's not a flying ring. Sometimes things are out of reach, laddie. Like, you know. What a useless idiot. Sorry. What a useless idiot. Yeah, there you go.
But regardless, seeing as you seem to love the guy.
He's weird. Anyway, who thought of this guy? That's all I'm saying. You know, like he gets ambushed in a dark alley. Rah, ladders.
Here's a ladder, have a ladder, take a ladder, throw a ladder.
A ladder just hits you in the face, and then when you recover, you see him like scaling the side of a building on a ladder really quick or something.
Jesus.
It's ridiculous, anyway.
Where the fuck are we? So, if you do give him 2,000 souls, as we said, he puts a ladder down and you can get to a lower ledge. It's not worth doing.
Yeah, you can just jump down.
And it doesn't even take that much health, so you can even do it without a fall or resting ring or
spell or anything, yeah. Yeah, so he's pointless. Anyway, he does talk to you about the area, and he tells you about Mitha, the Baneful Queen, which is interesting. I like that. I would have given him 2,000 souls for that.
Yeah, so despite his other flaws, he actually is incredibly important for those that are interested in the lore for the area. He tells you pretty much the entire backstory.
Yeah, which is cool. Normally you have to kind of learn the lore by discerning things, but yeah.
Oh, you still need to make some connections.
Oh, sure.
Which, to be honest, seeing as he discusses Mitha quite a bit, I think now would be a good time to go into it. And I have some theories about this.
Oh, really? Talk at me.
I've been doing some digging. Right, so I think I'm going to blow some minds, right? So Gilligan tells us that Mitha was married to the prince in a castle nearby, and we know that the next area is the Iron Keep, and a keep is typically the center tower of a castle.
Yes.
The whole area does look much like a castle.
It is, yeah, I think it is a castle.
So we know that the Iron King, or the old Iron King, is the owner of said castle. So you can make the connection that she's married to the old Iron King.
Or his son, the old Iron Prince. But but actually, I think there are later on, they talk about how, you know, particularly in the lore book, how Mitha was after the king.
Well, I'm going to go into that in a second. Okay. So she is the queen. So you only become queen through marrying a king, typically. It makes sense that whoever she was married to was king at some point. Now, I don't think it's his son. And this is the connection that I'm going to make here. Gilligan even says, that damn hag, she just can't let her old flame go. And he kind of says it in a wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of way.
Okay, that's interesting.
We know the old Iron King, when you finally encounter him, which we'll discuss next episode, he's kind of turned into a fire Balrog.
It's pretty hot.
Yeah. So I think it's very sensible to say that Mitha is queen to the old Iron King. And we know that the Iron Keep is actually home to Belfry Sol. And again, we'll cover this next episode. But on the episode where we covered the Lost Bastille, we learnt that Belfry Luna was actually on the land that used to be Venn.
I think I see where you're going.
Belfry Sol, it makes sense, is in the land of Alcan.
Mm-hmm.
So the realm of the old Iron King is Alcan. And it's not uncommon for kings to have started as princes.
Yes.
Now, we know Gilligan talks about Mitha as marrying the prince in the castle.
Oh.
But she is a queen, so it makes sense that her prince eventually turned into a king. I think that pretty well establishes the old Iron King as the Prince of Alcan.
Oh my gosh, you're probably right. And Mitha is the Princess of Venn?
No, because we know that the Prince of Alcan was in love with the Princess of Venn. And we know that their love was forbidden. And I think that's why, because he was a married man. He had married Mitha.
Oh, and that's why she's so pissed off all the time. Because he wants to.
So she is trying to, in her own vain way, attract the king again because she's in love with him. And she's doing this through the use of the poison in the area to try and gain his attention and affection, which is what's making her so angry because he is in love with another woman. To bring it all back around, she's pretty much deeply in love with a man who's deeply in love with another woman.
And the covetous demon is in love with her and turns angry and crazy because she's in love with the Prince of Alcan.
Yeah, it's all a big messed up Days of Our Lives kind of shit fest.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I really like that. That's so deep. I think it's wrong.
You think it's wrong?
Well, actually, I think it's probably right. But let's talk about the Grave Wardens for a second. Why are the Grave Wardens there? Well, later on, we'll go to the place where the Grave Wardens come from, right? And we'll meet a guy called Agdane. And Agdane is like obsessive about that area. You know, like you don't. Mm-hmm. If you carry a torch in there, he will murder you. Like, he hates, literally, he'll kill you. There's rules there, and you don't screw around with it. And there are all these people there suffering this horrible, horrible fate because they came there and acted a bit rowdy or whatever. So he will mess you up if you do the wrong thing, right?
Correct.
And I actually think you're correct, but my theory went that the reason the Grave Wardens are hanging out so close to Mitha is because she kept going or sending people to the Undead Crypt to try to lure the king who hangs out in the Undead Crypt to come hang out with her and be a, you know, little king boyfriend. And maybe that's why the Grave Wardens are there, because Agdane got so sick of it and said, you guys, just go over there and make sure she doesn't act up.
Ah, so when we get to her arena, there's two wardens guarding her little
room. Guarding the door.
So you're thinking that they're guarding her from getting out more than you from getting in.
Yes.
Huh. Interesting theory, but I don't think we can establish Agdane as a king in any way.
No, 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 no. I think there's a different king hanging out there that she's interested in. That's what I was suggesting. And that maybe it's not the old Iron King she wants at all. Maybe it's the other king. And maybe she keeps trying to interfere with the Undead Crypt because she wants that king so bad. And so he finally sent a contingent of wardens to keep her out. Yeah, yours is cooler. Much cooler.
I think more established as well. I mean, just in Gilligan's dialogue, it's so clear that the old Iron King has to be the Prince of Alcan. It doesn't make sense otherwise, the things he says. I mean, I won't be able to cut his entire dialogue into this episode, but go back and listen to it if you're doubting. Make those connections. It doesn't point in any other direction for me.
Yeah, so, okay. Well, that's quite cool. I'm quite impressed with that.
You kind of raised it a bit earlier as well, but the only unanswered question left for me is who's the Princess of Venn?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she's never comes up, or maybe...
Well, I have a theory, but I think we'll save that discussion for discussing when we get to Belfry Soul.
Why did you put so much emphasis on discussing?
I mean what I said.
Discussing. Oh, no. You reckon?
We'll get to that next episode. So, what else can you do with old Gilligan?
I don't know. Whatever I like. I could probably make fun of his powers, and what's he going to do? Summon a ladder? but no, he sells you stuff.
Yeah, so you can learn prostration from him.
Yeah, like which is laying down.
Sticking your prostate out.
Oh, that's called a prolapse, and I don't think that's... it's not called prolapsation.
Yeah, so he does become a merchant at this point, and you can buy a whip and some claws from him. The whip is described as being best used against bare flesh.
I agree.
And the claws pretty much look like something straight out of a Freddy Krueger movie.
Yeah.
And you can also buy an infinite amount of aromatic ooze off him, which is used for temporarily enchanting weapons with magic.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also buy bleeding serum, which allows you to temporarily bleed enchant a weapon.
And lacerating knives, which you can, you know, throw at things to do bleed. But who cares about bleed in this game? Particularly against NPCs. It's like, who cares, bleed?
Okay. Finally, the last thing he sells is a miniature ladder.
Yeah, the ladder miniature. This is like the lowest form of summon he can perform. Pop, and the little ladder appears.
The description for this item is, this ornament does not seem to have any particular function and should not be worth much, but is sold at an exorbitant price, which goes with his hunger for souls.
Yeah, I mean, he's an upstart. And actually, later on, I think it becomes important to have that.
Yeah, it's basically, it serves no purpose at this point. So if you want to overlook it for now, that's fine. Mm. If you do purchase it, great. It's going to sit in your inventory until much later in the game, yes, where you sort of meet an NPC that sends you on a bit of a morbid fetch quest.
Yeah, and if you kill him, that's what he drops, interestingly enough, which, yes, I suppose fits with the entire thing we're talking about, which we're going to later. And actually, once you're done with him, well, once you've killed Mitha anyway, he goes to Majula. And when he gets there, you can have a chat with Lenegrast. Do you know this?
No.
Ah, well, you can, I think it's Lenegrast you speak to, I'll confirm it. You go and talk to him and he says, oh, this man has appeared around here, you know, a real upstart from the town I'm from, you know, nobody likes him and he's wanted by many people for, you know, for being a scoundrel, basically.
Oh, well, I never knew. As I said, I looked into why he would be a hunted man earlier and I couldn't find any reason, but that may be why.
I'm pretty sure it's Lenegrast, and he's really, you know, Lenegrast is like this kind of proper...
staunch, yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of like, oh, that scallywag's hanging out around here.
Cool.
He should go hit him with his hammer. Maybe he's afraid of ladders. Maybe that's it.
Yes, but as we said, he does move to Majula, and you can use him to purchase ladders to the big pit in Majula. So he's one way of getting to that lower area, which we'll be covering in some episodes' time.
Yes.
So that's that. Gilligan, what now?
Back up the ladder and along the ledge to the balcony room. And go to the end and around the corner. There's a lever on the wall which raises a large elevator.
Yeah, so there's a little elevator further down the aisle. Pull the lever, wait for the elevator to raise, and then pick up an item from underneath. Mm-hmm. Now, this is something I've checked for every elevator in the game so far. Not this game, even Demon Souls and Dark Souls. And so far, I've never been rewarded for it. I thought, easy secret, have an elevator, trigger the elevator, go up, quickly get off the elevator, have something under the elevator. Never happened. This is the one time that it's finally paid off.
I'm glad it finally paid off for you.
Yeah, I've been doing it for a while. What do you get?
Oh, large soul of a proud knight and a divine breath. Blessing.
Yeah, so you don't get anything too rewarding from it. A large soul of a proud knight and a divine blessing.
Divine blessing, yeah.
Breasts.
Fucking hell.
it's
all you think about is tits.
It's true. Now, you've got to be careful, though, because the elevator does come back down on its own accord.
So when you raise it, it only raises temporarily. It just kind of comes back down.
Yeah, so you've got to quickly make it to a ramp to get out of this little recessed area below the elevator to make sure you don't get crushed, like the poor soul that you picked up the divine blessing from.
Oh, I suppose that must be the story.
Well, actually, the elevator drops down into this little sort of recessed area, and then in the middle of that area is another dipped in area where the corpse is.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about that. I'm like, well, it makes sense that, you know, somebody got crushed under there and you're picking up the items off the corpse. But if you see the elevator coming down, he could have just laid down and he wouldn't have got crushed. Now, if he did that, though,
he'd be stuck under until he died.
Oh. So it's even sadder than that. Yeah, he probably died of starvation or something.
Do you know what that made me think of? It made me think of a situation where you're stuck in the bottom of like a pit and that elevator's coming down and you think, I can go and lay in the hole or not lay in the hole. Which one's actually better?
Yeah.
It's harsh, man.
Yeah, and you just have to hope somebody comes along and raises it.
Yeah, that's what I'd have to do. You'd have to just hope for the best.
I guess the only upside is hopefully by the time you die, you're so delusional from hunger you don't even know you're dying.
That doesn't mean to be fun along the way.
Yeah, this is morbid. Moving right along. Once the elevators come back down, you need to run back to the lever. And this time when you pull it, quickly run to the elevator and get on top of it. This is going to take you up to a ledge above where the ladder is in that room.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get the mirror shield out of a chest.
And that's not MIRROR. Not a shield you can look into. Because we're being Australians, mirror, which is a land beset by constant war where Luca Teal hails from, and mirror, which is a thing you look into to see your own ugly reflection, just sound exactly the damn same.
And it's so confusing because you encounter the mirror knight.
No, the looking glass knight, but he has a mirror shield,
yeah, colloquially. Okay, no, you're right. He is the looking glass knight. But from the moment the first trailer came out about the game,
yeah,
a year before the game came out, he was in it, and everyone has referred to him as the mirror knight since then because mm-hmm. his shield has an enormous mirror on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like you pick up the mirror shield, which is nowhere near as cool as his shield, which is actually a shield that you can get later in the game, but isn't called a mirror shield. So it just gets so confusing.
A lot of Americans say mirror.
Mirror.
M-E-M-E-R.
Isn't
mirror.
That one of the three things that Jesus got on his birth?
No, that's myrrh. But take go America. Take a look in the mirror.
Oh, okay. Well,
anyway, so now that you've got the mirror shield, go back down, up the ladder, and down a corridor. Yeah.
So, two-thirds up the corridor, on the right. This is the right, absolutely.
Not the left, right, the right, right.
There is a room with Pate.
Fucking Pate.
Yeah.
Well, we meet again. There's treasure this way, but I've a bad feeling about it. I don't quite have the guts myself.
Yeah, so he advises you there's treasure in the area, but he doesn't have the guts to go get it. And if you brought him into the last giant fight and he lived, he will give you his gear. That's very generous of him. He's supposed to be some kind of money-hungry little parasite, but he just gives you stuff.
We can't be sure yet. He appears to be that way.
I think he is.
Appearances can be deceiving.
Yeah, I thought you were like a nice guy and everything.
Yeah, I thought you were too, you dick. he gives you quite a bounty too. It's not just like, here, have my spear or something. He gives you his spear, his entire armor set, and the Ring of Thorns.
Now, I've never used this ring. Is it actually any good? So here's what it does. I'll read you the item description. Ring granted protection by Kreml, god of struggle. The ring's spikes drive into the wearer's skin so that each blow taken fuels spite towards the perpetrator.
Super cool.
Why, thank you. So what it does is...
I mean the ring.
Oh, well, thank you anyway. When you get struck, some magical fucking how, the ring's little spikes drive into your skin and make you angry that someone hit you with a sword, like you weren't angry enough already.
But regardless, the dynamic there is it's not just each time somebody strikes you, they take damage. There's a proc bar, much like, say, poison or something. I don't believe you see it at all, so it's just happening behind the scenes. But every time you take a hit... It fills the bar until the breaking point where what it does is it triggers three projectiles that go out in an arch in front of you.
Because you're so angry.
Yeah. So I can't see it being too useful. I think the projectiles do a reasonable amount of damage, but you have to take direct hits to trigger it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're holding a shield up, it won't trigger it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, it might be good. I don't know. If someone's got a flurry of attacks, boom, 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 boom on you, and then they get their poise broken or whatever by a sudden, if they're that close to you, all three projectiles might hit them. I don't know. I've never used it. Check it out. Do you know why Pate will give you all this stuff?
I've heard rumors. Tell me, because I was going to bring it up myself, but I didn't know enough detail.
It's because Creighton, this is the theory. It's because Creighton of Mira, who hates Pate, and Pate hates him, wants to kill him. You know, he's been saying, I'm going to wring his neck and all this jazz. So he gives you all his gear so you look like him.
Yeah, that's what I heard. But I didn't know that that's all there was to it. I thought there might have been a bit more.
I think that's it. So yeah, he's a little self-interested prick.
Now, as we also mentioned, he gives you his spear as well and his full armor set. The spear has the description, this appears to be a very ordinary spear, but seems to have accumulated power over the course of countless battles. It is not always advisable to stand out, especially if you have something to hide. So, again, hinting at his background.
Yeah, that, I mean, that kind of says it all, doesn't it?
But who's to say it was his spear all along? We don't know. I mean, there's always a loophole or a way out.
Well, I mean, consider what it says about his set. Although it appears to be common armor, it has in fact been meticulously customized. Belonged to mild-mannered Pate. This has been considerably altered. Perhaps it was pillaged.
So it's not painting a good picture. I do think it is all pointing to him being a bit of a
dick
scoundrel.
Yeah. He's as bad as that Egypt Gilligan.
I don't think Gilligan's killed anyone. Now, there's a door in the room with Pate, regardless.
Mm-hmm. But you can't open it from this side.
Yeah. So we'll come back around to that in a second. But from here, exit his room and go a little further up the corridor. And again, you can exit into an area on the right. Be aware, there's a grave ward just on the left.
Yes.
So take him out and then head into the right room.
Yeah. And here you see your first desert sorcerer. Now, these guys are from Jugo. Same as my favorite, Ben Hart of Jugo. He's so cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, I love Ben Hart. When you summon him, he's invaluable in a fight. But also, I just love his accent and his sword and his armor, and he just hangs out. He's so cool.
I've only heard from actual Scottish people saying his accent is horrible, but
well, earlier on the stream, we heard from an actual Scottish person who said my Scottish accent was all right. So, you know.
Yeah. Maybe all Scottish people are deaf.
Maybe.
So, the sorcerers are actually quite beautiful.
What are they called again? Desert
sorcerers.
Sorceresses?
I would,
Yeah, so
I'd call them a bit cleavy. I'd say they're...
Cleavy. You're going on about tits.
They're a bit cumly-yum.
Fuck off. they are. They wear this, like, really small, skimpy thing, and they should kill you.
And there is an NPC that's quite attractive and young who you can give your armor to, and she will wear it. So
you gave her the skimpiest thing you could give her, which you got off these guys. Of course you fucking did. Anyway...
I'm only a man.
You said that it was a bit weird that Mytha would keep them around, considering they...
are so beautiful, and she's so vain. You would think that they'd be a threat.
So, here's the story.
Go.
Here's how it happened. Mytha came upon, at some point, the knowledge that you could use that poison magically somehow to become young and beautiful. And who do you think gave her that knowledge? You don't think maybe that her attendants, those sorcerers, look so damn good because they're using the poison to look good, and they're the ones that sold it to her, so they were around there because they were, like, you know, helping her take her doses of poison.
Sounding very confident, I'm wondering if this is you taking the advice I gave you last episode about if you make some bullshit up on the spot but say it confidently, people are going to believe it.
Well, actually, that's not what I was doing.
Because I do. I'm left wondering, is this something that is explicitly said somewhere
in
the game?
It's not at all. I just figure that's got to be the explanation. Because why else would you keep them around? They are banging, you know. Can't see their faces, I don't think. But you can see they're like,
they're
pretty
good.
Fit. You know?
Hood completely obfuscates their face. It's very blacked out.
Yeah, so you never know if they're cute or not.
They're cute.
You don't know. How do you know? They've got hoods on.
Just keep it on then. Now, these guys pretty much use entirely pyros. They do have a slight physical attack with their little fans, which appear to be what they're using to cast the pyros.
It's interesting. Yeah.
It is a fan, and so it's kind of pretty low damage. Mm. Nothing to be terribly afraid of.
Yes.
Now, when you encounter her, she's actually across a gap on the ledge of the wall that you're now walking across. And the gap, this time you can jump. There's a chest. It's a very hard jump to make, but there's just a little bit protruding from the left-hand side of the wall, which you can land on if you're skilled enough.
Yes.
Now, in this chest, you can pick up a crimson water, which is an item that greatly restores HP and spell uses, and I would love to give you some more lore background on it, but I think even the description itself mentioned that nobody knows anything about it, so that's that.
Yeah.
Turn around, jump back over the gap, and before you head off, there's a wooden barrier just there, stopping you from falling off the ledge. You can break this barrier, and if you do, you can fall down to another ledge below, which leads around to a chest where you can pick up a...
great heavy soul arrow.
Which I'm sure makes you very happy.
Yeah, I do like my spells. You know, I'm not a... I like my spells. and from there, actually, you can go around and open the door to Pate.
Yeah, so this is the treasure he was talking about. If you talk to him at this point after picking it up, he tells you that he's happy to let you have it.
What does he mean, let you have it? He can't take it off me. What a dick.
Yeah, he's pretty much saying that you don't know who you can trust anymore, and he's willing to concede that you showed the guts where he wouldn't, and you've earned the item.
Mm. He talks to you about how someone's out for his life as well, and he's talking about Creighton of Mira, who we talked about earlier.
But he sort of plays it off in this way. You know, he says, don't know what misunderstanding could have led to him thinking that he needs to come after me and kill me. So it's interesting in that way.
Yeah, he's just manipulative.
So from Pate, head back up to where you were just then, where you took on the first desert sorceress, and fall back down onto that ledge that you dropped onto where you broke the wooden barrier. And from here, you can actually jump across to the bridge where you first came across that first grave warden. You know, the one with the two mannequins where shooting there was poison arrows at you. You
couldn't jump.
Yeah. So this is how you get to that other side of the bridge with, as you said, the break in it that you weren't able to jump earlier.
Yeah. And so once you get down there, you'll get the poison broadsword and a human effigy. So those were the things you could see from a distance but couldn't get.
Mm. Okay. Now, you can get off this side of the bridge by making a jump, but it's a bit risky. You need to sort of jump 90 degrees to the right and down to another ledge, but it's quite a large jump. So I would suggest at this point just using a homeward bone to get out of there.
Yeah, if you got one.
Now, back to the end of that corridor where you sort of had that room with Pate on the right and the desert sorceress on the right. This time we're going left to where you took out the grave warden.
Mm-hmm. In that area, there's another grave warden and two of those sexy sorceresses and some chests. Now, the one on the left is booby-trapped, so beware as you open it that you may need to roll backwards. I think it's poison normally, and you'll get a Pharos stone out of it.
Yeah, I do wonder. For me, and every time I've seen anybody else doing it, has been poisoned. Usually the chests are random. They could be poisoned or have the white smoke with the crossbow, but it would make sense if this one just happens poison. To always be poisoned in this area. Now, you said something a moment ago, and I don't know if you said it out of ignorance or if you were making a joke, but you said there's a few chests in the area. Oh, there's only one. But I was going to let it slide because I figured, those sexy sorceresses.
Yeah, I just thought I saw multiple chests there.
Sorry, I giggled like a schoolgirl then.
It's because you were thinking about boobs.
It's true.
So get out of there. Go back around the corner, and there's this really unique little formation. It's the inner workings of one of those windmills, and it's a hole in the ground with some turning fan blades. If you burn the windmill, they stop, but you can actually get to the other side of this arrangement. But it's just interesting. I've never seen that in the game before.
You can drop into that hole. For me at the moment, it's never had a use because it just sort of loops you back around to where you were anyway.
There's a mannequin down there who'll try to stab you.
Yeah, but there's no item, so kind of pointless for the moment. So jump over the fan blades to the other side. As you said, Church, if you don't stop that windmill, though, they're going quite fast, and they can prove quite a threat if you don't jump now, successfully.
I've never seen them moving because when I go through there, I burn the thing straight away. Can they actually cut you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
So, to the left, through an archway, and you end up on sort of a new little bridgey kind of a section, and there's a hole in the floor with a ladder. This is the ladder that we mentioned earlier as being a shortcut.
Yes, with the pressure plate and the arrows and the mannequin.
Yep, that's the one. So you can see that if you took that ladder earlier, you would have ended up right here. Skip that entire section that we've just spent the last 20 minutes discussing.
You wouldn't have got the items, you wouldn't have fought the enemies, you wouldn't have seen the chests. You know, it's a waste of time to not do that. Stop thinking about them, just talk.
It would have made more sense to me if this was like one of those ladders that you could kick down just to open up the shortcut to force
you
to go
so you
through.
Can only do it from the top half. Yeah. That would make more sense. But you know, who are we to question the creators of this game?
Yep. So, at the other end of the bridge, up some ladders. Up some stairs.
Up some ladders, two at once. Did Gilligan help you out with that one? One in each hand? So, anyway, you go up those ladders, otherwise known as stairs, and
room on the right.
Yep.
Full of poison pots and a ton of those poison beetles that we discussed last episode.
Yes, and the only value of this room is the fact that there's a chest in there.
Yeah. Or is there?
Yes, there is.
Or is it?
Yes, it is. Oh, isn't it?
It's the first mimic that you come across for the game.
Oh, sorry. I thought I was confused. I thought, what the fuck are you talking about? so it is. It's a mimic. And actually, I knew because there was messages on the ground warning me.
But if you hadn't played the previous game, even with the messages, you probably wouldn't know what to expect.
And that's the thing is, you know, everyone gets killed by their first mimic.
Yeah, it's exceptional. It's so good. I love it.
Opening the chest is a guaranteed death. It
just
grabs
about,
you. You know, unless you've got phenomenal health or phenomenal defense, picks you up and chomps your head and that's it. You're done.
Yeah, gnaws your head off and that's the end of that.
Yeah.
They have a few cool dynamics. Firstly, if you have a few of those Lloyd's talismans that we picked up, if you haven't bought any the first time in Hate Seraphim, and you throw a Lloyd's talisman at a mimic, it will de-summon it. So if you strike a chest, it'll sort of pop out and start coming at you with its gangly arms and legs and whatnot. If you throw a Lloyd at it then it will turn back into a chest with just the open lid, and you can pick up the item from inside of it without ever fighting it. If you throw a Lloyd at a chest that you believe is a mimic before it's actually, you know, started to attack you, it will do the same thing, open up, allow you to take the item. So you could technically go the entire game without ever killing a mimic and still get all the items out of them. But they aren't terribly hard to fight as long as you don't get caught off guard, you know, by getting your face knocked
off. They telegraph their moves and they're quite slow. And anyway, generally I deal with the mimic by striking the chest. Why not just go around behind the chest, strike it from behind, and then just kill the mimic from behind? Easy to play.
But again, it relies on you knowing that it's a mimic. Yeah. Now, do you know how to tell whether a chest is a mimic?
Well, they look differently. They look different, that is. Two things. The front of the chest has a lock on it, which the other chests don't have.
Yeah.
And also, at the right angle, which I think, you know, generally the binoculars are best for this, you can see that it has teeth. And I say teeth in kind of inverted commas because we learned that in the last game. I'm not sure about this game, but in the last game, they're actually human fingers.
Really cool.
They're not teeth at all. I wonder, in the last game, they breathed as well.
Yeah.
Ever so slightly, the chest opened and closed just a little bit.
You need to be really observant. But yeah, it was really cool. You could even see a tiny bit of condensation come off them.
Really? I never noticed that. That's amazing.
But yeah, in this one, the easiest way would just be to simply look for the lock. If you see a lock on the front, it's a mimic. Now, in that room is also a Pharos contraption.
Yes, and you're going to have to stand in this little recess to access it. Now, if you stop the windmill, then what comes out of the Pharos contraption is healing water.
Yeah, it lands into the little pool area in front of it. Yeah. And if you stand around in it, it'll regenerate your health.
That's pretty cool. If you haven't stopped the fan, it's poison.
Which is really cool. I like that touch. You know,
yeah.
This, as we said, engaging that windmill earlier on the level has such huge implications for this entire area.
Yeah. I think it also has something to say about the way the level is. Now, Pharos was a good guy, right? And he went around setting up all these amazingly improbable devices to help people. So it makes sense that the healing water, which we kind of only see here, came from Pharos. And that suggests that when he came through there, it wasn't made for that purpose to pump poison up. Something else was going on there. And then it sounds like the water was corrupted by the poison coming through, because Pharos wouldn't set that up. Now, there are some contraptions in the game that are harmful and are not real Pharos stones. And that's actually what, when you examine the Pharos stone, it says there are some contraptions that are attributed to Pharos the Wanderer, but were not made by him. And I think that's what they're talking about. But I don't think that's what's going on. I think Pharos actually made this device, and then later it got corrupted by the poison. So that suggests that at one point, this area wasn't made to move poison.
Yeah, a leak in the pipe or something, and the poison just got into the stream.
Yeah.
Now, before we move back out of this area, we neglected to mention what you get out of the mimic.
Oh, yes, of course.
So, you can get the work hook, which looks like something straight out of Peter Pan.
Mm-hmm.
And it even has the description, clearly not intended as a weapon, but sharp enough to shred an enemy's skin. So, it's just another one of those gimmicky kind of weapons that somebody's probably going to use for cosplay more than real battle. And you also get the Dark Gauntlets. Now, these ones are cool because they explicitly talk about the Dark Wraiths.
Yeah.
Which were the Covenant Brethren from the previous game called the Dark Wraiths. Mm-hmm. They were corrupted soldiers that turned to trying to figure out the Art of Life Drain, it was called, which in the previous game was the ability to suck humanity from another player, which was kind of a sub-currency of the game.
Yeah. So I think that's cool. I like all these things that harken back to the olden days when it was all Lordran. And it's also more confirmation that of the chronology of the series, yeah?
Mm.
So get out of there. Up another flight of stairs and you take on an unnamed Red Phantom.
Yeah, he's generally just referred to as the Red Sickle Phantom, as he has an enormous sickle just like the patchwork undead from the Huntsman's Copse. Mm.
And he has brigand armor on. Obviously in No Man's War there was talk about brigands being petty thieves, but who knows why he's here? And it's also, you know, most Red Phantoms have a name.
A lot do, not all of them.
But is this one, he doesn't summon in though, does he?
No.
He's not an invader, he's just a Red Phantom. He's just hanging out there.
Yeah, that may have something to do with it. The guys that are just standing there don't tend to have names.
I find that quite confusing. Where do they come from? We know what a Red Phantom is. It's an invader from another world. And these are just permanently hanging out there?
It's another one of those that kind of feels like maybe From just threw them in the game and didn't quite have enough time to fully flesh them out.
Yeah, I don't know why that's happened.
So, from the top of these stairs, you end up on a tiny little ledge, which is overlooking an area which you were sort of in earlier. This is where you took on the Grave Warden and the Undead Sorceress before you went up the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's just a little balcony. There's nothing really to it, and it looks like it's dead end. But if you go right, there's a wall which you can engage, and it will open up, and there will be a bonfire, which this is immediately above Mitha, her boss fight. So if you're not using this bonfire, if you're not aware it's there, like glass shattering moment, it's just... it's going to make this boss fight so much easier because if Absolutely. You die, it's literally a 10-meter run to get back to it.
Yes, and it's very frustrating because I actually didn't know about this initially from my first playthrough because I don't like to... the first time I go through an area, I read nothing, so I didn't know it was there. And I was coming, killing all those bloody sorceresses and then killing the two guards, which you have to kill anyway, just to get back to it. Very frustrating.
Mm. Now, that's not the only secret. As you exit the little room with the bonfire, if you turn left and go to the other side, there's another wall which you can engage and open up, and there's a chest inside.
Yeah, and this chest has, you know, we often talk about how the secrets in this game aren't very rewarding, but this one is very rewarding. You get the petrified something. Now, the petrified something in and of itself is useless, but you can trade it with Dinah and Tilo to get a random, extremely rare item.
Yeah, and I think the uniqueness and rarity of this item is what's rewarding.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, so in and of itself, nothing particularly awesome, but this is what I want from secrets. I want the rare items. I want the items that I'm excited to get, the unique or, you know, something that you're not going to get anywhere else, not, you know, a torch.
Absolutely. So go back down the stairs and you'll encounter an area that's recessed into the ground. If the windmill's still running, it's flooded with poison. If not, then you can just walk up to the stairs and the entrance to the boss fight. In front of the doors are two wardens.
Yeah, so these are the ones that you mentioned earlier, maybe actually guarding Mitha from getting out,
keeping
more
her
than
in
you from getting in.
Rather than out, we'll see. But then if you think about the power of Mitha and you think about the power of the Grave Wardens, you think she could just kill them anytime she wants?
Sure, but I mean, they're throughout the level, so your theory still works. I just think it's wrong.
Yeah, I think it's wrong too, but it's interesting. Yeah.
So, as you mentioned, they're on some stairs, which is directly above a little recessed area, and this area can be filled with poison. If it's not, you have the ability to summon Jester Thomas at a summon sign at the base of the stairs. Now,
I wonder, even if it's got poison in it, can you still summon him?
I'm not sure. I wondered myself. I didn't know he was there because of the poison when I played through with the poison there. So I never tested it. It's the kind of thing where I would purposely have to not trigger the windmill and go to find out. So who knows? But on the other side of the stairs is a skeleton as well, which would normally be covered by the poison that you wouldn't see, with a poison stone on it, which you can use to enchant a weapon with poison attributes.
Yeah.
Now, Jester Thomas. Interesting character.
Awesome character.
Yeah, some people are referring to him as Jester Tarkus because Iron Tarkus was a bit of a crowd favourite from the previous game.
Yeah, for being overpowered.
Yeah, he was a summonable NPC for one of the boss fights in the game and he could pretty much solo that boss without any intervention from yourself. So same sort of a deal with Jester Thomas. We mentioned Mitha is particularly weak to fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he is chew-wielding pyroflames. Yeah, so he's just bam, 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 bam. Like constant flame swathe and, you know, firebombs all over the damn joint.
So who do you think he is? Like, is there any significance to the guy?
Well, I've read some theories, by which I mean I've read a theory, which is kind of compelling. And I don't know that there would ever be enough supporting evidence to confirm it. But it's a nice narrative and it fits in. I think we'll probably raise it again next episode, though, because it's referring to an NPC from the next area.
Okay, you do that, that's fine. So, now you can go and fight Mitha.
Yeah, we've pretty much already explained everything there is to really know about her lore.
Yeah, you know, it's another unrequited love story. She's the Baneful Queen.
Yeah, now, baneful I found interesting. The word itself means angry or powerful, but in antiquity, it actually means poisonous. So it just felt like a really fitting word, obviously. They chose it purposefully because she is all about the poison and the anger.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned that she's had her head severed off. She's this snake creature, which, you know, is a raised human torso on this snake body, and her head is held by her left hand, and she uses her head to cast...
It's like a catalyst.
Yeah, she spits out these awesome spells at you with a scream. Like,
yeah.
She'll shriek at you and this spell would...
That was a terrible imitation. But I can't imitate it either, so that's why I don't try.
The alternative would be to scream into a mic, which would peak, so bugger that.
Anyway, she also tosses her head at you, and then after a few seconds, it kind of lets off this explosion, and if you're too close to it, you'll get damaged.
I've never noticed.
Oh, yeah, she'll peg it at you. She just lobs it underhand.
How does she get it back? Just like,
I don't remember if she summons it back to herself or if she goes over to it and picks it up. Like,
fair enough.
It's kind of like the end of Braveheart. Have you seen that? When he throws his sword at the enemy army, you know? They're like all lined up like they do in those old movies, and he pegs his sword at them and it sticks in the ground, which was lucky. If it hadn't stuck in the ground, it'd be awkward. But like, oh, it was a bit lame. It just kind of dropped in the dirt. But then he's kind of like got no sword. And everyone, you know, you'd think everyone would have been like, why'd you do that? You're going to have a fight. What are you thinking? That's the one thing that's going to keep you alive, buddy. What are you doing? Head. All his mates would be like, shit, who brought this idiot?
Like, even if she does have to go and pick it up, she wouldn't know where it is. It's her eyes, you know? Like, body's just
good point.
Walking around aimlessly going, fuck, shit. It's like when you drop your contacts.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, Mel Gibson's dumb.
So, as we've mentioned, she is significantly harder if you don't stop that windmill because she's in a room that's fully flooded with poison, which factors in two ways. One, you're constantly taking poison while you're in there. And two, the poison actually heals her in the fight. So when you drain the room of poison, it opens this big circular area. Now, there is still a rim around the central circle does have some poison in it. So be aware, if she's hanging around in that, try to lure her out because she will start to heal. There's a few interesting things with her. You can cut off her tail. Unfortunately, unlike nothing the last happens. Game, like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, you don't get any special item for it, but it does stop her from being able to do some tail whip sort of attacks, which can help.
She's weak against flame. Thomas will just burn her to death. Weird that the court jester wants to kill the queen.
Yeah, I thought so. Is it that he was sick of being the laughing stock for them?
Or, that's his job.
Yeah. Maybe he didn't like it. Maybe, as happens not terribly unoften in these games. That was a terribly phrased sentence, but I'm sticking with it.
That happens not terribly unoften in this podcast, I've noticed.
It's possible that he believed that she was better off dead. He was putting her out of her misery or something. He may have been a loyal servant and, you know, putting an end to her.
When did that happen elsewhere in this game?
Oh, you know, like Tark with...
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
That's... We covered that area.
Don't think so. Yeah. The Scorpionus. Maybe it's actually the jester of the king.
Well, yeah, that's another possibility, I suppose. Maybe the king's put a hit on her.
Yeah. And any jester who wants to kill the queen, you know, like... Why is it the jester? Couldn't he send some knights? But whatever.
Get him in.
Yeah.
Under the radar.
Yeah. She laughs herself to death, maybe. When that fails, she turns to pyromancy.
Shrieks herself to death. Could you imagine?
God, that was horrible. But yes, that's probably what it would sound like.
So, regardless, that is the Baneful Queen Mitha. As I mentioned, I had the room filled with poison the first time I took her on, and I somehow managed to defeat her.
That's amazing.
I can't believe it myself in hindsight. Same sort of deal with you. I played through the area for the first time, and I knew that there had to be a secret. I knew there had to be a way of encountering her without the poison or with ring that gives you poison resistance or something like that. But I refused to read a tutorial until I had succeeded. And it was literally just a perfect storm of statistics on that character that allowed it to work. My great club just happened to do enough damage that I could run in, use a healing gem, whack her three times, use a Estus to get my health back up from all the poison I was taking, whack her two more times and take her out, and then quickly run to like the stairs before I died. And so, yeah,
it's amazing.
It worked. I feel like it's a challenge run type thing and I've already achieved it.
That's cool.
Mm.
So she, drops nothing but her soul when she's killed.
And you can trade that with Strayed for Mitha's Bent Blade. Really cool looking weapon.
Yeah, but she doesn't use it. Like you know, you can get the Flexile Sentry's weapon. Yeah. You can get the Pursuer's sword or shield.
Yeah.
You get a sword from Mitha that she never uses. But, you know, that's not uncommon. That happens not unoften in this game.
You ass. But the sword does have built-in poison, which makes sense.
Yeah. So, go out of the room, and you'll find another elevator. Up the elevator, through a corridor and to the Iron Keep.
Yeah, so we'll be covering this area next time. We would probably normally cut it there, but I will mention that the moment you walk into the Iron Keep, you're looking at this enormous bridge. If you turn immediately left, you can go down a very small flight of stairs and hit the first bonfire. The only reason I raise that is because so far, every time I've watched a mate play this area for the first time, they miss it.
Yeah, so, well, it's not obvious. Well, I mean, I like to explore everything, but yeah, like most people wouldn't see. And also, the castle looks so damn cool that you just want to go and explore it. Also, don't forget, Gilligan has now gone back to Majula now that you've killed Mitha, and he will sell you those ladders or conjure those ladders out of nowhere in exchange for souls to get you down to that hole. And he's a bit of a dick, right? Because we'll talk about it later, I assume, but you kind of get to choose the price for the ladder, and there's three different prices you can choose. And once you've chosen the two high ones, you've got no option but to choose the low ones. And then you choose it, and he goes, "You just don't get it, do you?" And it's like, well, fuck you, buddy. I've only got the option to give you 500 souls. I don't have a choice.
And those first small ones are like teasing you as well. It's like, give him your souls, and he's just going to completely fuck you over.
Yeah, you go to like, you go 3 meters down a ladder and hang out there, and then it's like, well, what is this?
I'm just going to fall to my death anyway.
And he could have summoned any length of ladder he wants.
Apparently.
He's a ladder conjurer. So what's the mod of the week, you?
So, Church, what's the mod of the week?
The mod of the week is Dark Souls 2 Dead Zone Fixed by MTAYE. Is it MTAY?
That didn't go to plan at all.
Mount I?
I thought...
MTAY.
Normally...
Maddie. It's Maddie by Maddie.
I think it's MTAY. But I thought usually each week I put you on the spot by asking you what the question is. If I ask you what the mod is, then I'm putting you even more on the spot because you don't know mods.
Yeah, but you wrote down what mod it is and you wrote down who it was by. So
oh, that's very good. You've learned how to read. You? Congratulations. Yeah, welcome to the third grade.
Is that where you are? Third grade? You're welcoming me there? Thanks, buddy. Just dropping off your lunch. Anyway.
how do you do it? Every time I think I've got the upper hand, you turn it back around.
I don't know. I'm just an asshole. You should just abandon all your scruples and you can be just like me.
Right. So, as we said, the mod is Dark Souls 2 Dead Zone Fix. And this one's cool. It came up on the stream last week and a few people are asking about it. So I thought, why not? It's worth talking about. I think we have briefly touched on it, but basically this one is what's called a wrapper file, which injects into the game. Once you run it, you don't know it's there. It just works all the time. And basically what it does is it takes the joysticks from being a sort of eight-pointed compass where it can go north, south, east, west, and the four directions in between, which it will snap to normally. Whereas this allows the joystick to be completely analog. So you point off in the direction of 178 degrees, you walk in 178 degrees. It just makes those jumps so much easier.
Burn alive.
So we'll leave a link to that in the show notes. What do you mean you'll burn alive?
When you listen back to this.
178 degrees. Yeah, there you go.
That's the one. Fucking hell, that's horrible. Anyway, so I've got a question of the week. Actually, you suggested it, but I'm going to ask it.
No, that was a joke.
No, it's too late. You've already said it, and you can always cut it out later, so you got all the power anyway.
I'll let you say the question, but it was supposed to make you laugh and not actually be for the podcast. Oh, well, I laughed. So we'll come up with a real question after this.
No, I think it's a fair question to ask of our audience. What's wrong with this?
It's pretty low effort.
Yeah, well, it is, but that's my style, buddy.
I know, Betty said.
Ooh, that's actually pretty good.
People make the connection that Betty's your girlfriend.
Well, you've still told them now. That's not bad. I don't mind that.
Thanks.
Pretty good. Anyway, I mean, no, I'm not going to go there.
Betty wishes she could do the same.
Oh, fuck. Well, the whole Twitch stream now believes your girlfriend is a prostitute, so I'm relatively happy.
Yeah, so if you're wondering what that's about, you're going to have to watch the YouTube of the most recent Twitch stream, episode 2.
But anyway, how many of you have listened after Betty's outro and actually heard the... little outtakes that get put in there. I'm interested to see that. That's my question of the week. You can ask a different one if you want, but that's my one.
Fair enough.
And then I threw my notes down on the ground when I said that like a boss. Like, that's my question, motherfucker.
Church out. And I got to say, because I feel pretty self-conscious all of a sudden. My girlfriend's awesome. Like,
oh, yeah, I like your girlfriend just fine.
She's great.
Yeah, cheap as chips. It's great.
This podcast.
She's a lovely girl, and I shouldn't be mean. I should be mean to you, but not to her. She doesn't deserve it.
She can't defend herself.
She lifts weights and stuff. She could beat the shit out of you.
I mean, right now, on the podcast.
She could come in here and beat the shit out of you.
She often does.
Ooh, you're into that, hey? I guess you have to be. Anyway. This is just bad.
It's a really mean way of saying she's fit.
She is. She's in shape and attractive and everything. I'm not being mean. It's fine. Just she's very nice. Nothing wrong with her. Not a prostitute.
Can we move on?
Yes. I just feel bad that if she ever listens to it, she's going
to
be like,
I know. That's why I've had to say something.
I know. I feel awkward. Anyway, nothing wrong with you. Just don't hate me. I think I annoy her anyway.
Could you wonder why?
Well, probably because I'm a horrible person, but anyway.
This is just us not knowing how to end a podcast, by the way. We should have cut it 2 minutes ago.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
The Dark Souls 2 has been a Screaming in Digital production. You can contact us on info@thedarksouls2.com, join the community at facebook.com/thedarksouls2, tweet @thedarksouls2, or leave a comment on the show notes. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider leaving a review on iTunes or spread the word. Our theme tune is The Knights of Darkness by Zero Project.
Why can't we just talk about it? Talk about it later as well.
We have. Yeah, no, that's fine. We'll carry on.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Let's fucking go more pitch spray.
Why not?
Okay, go. Good one, lad.
Lad?
Yeah.
All right, anyway, let's go.